Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, what a day. Simon Briggs from The Telegraph and myself, David Law, here on The Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with our good friends at The Telegraph and Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. We all thought it was going to be about Venus and Serena Williams tonight. It kind of was, Simon, but really, I mean, that was a bit of a damp squib after what we saw this afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, that's equaled the most one-sided match they've ever played in 30 meetings, 6-1, 6-2. Equaled Charleston 2013, so I didn't expect it to be that one-sided. I thought Serena would have too much, but she did play in a way that would put the shivers up a few of the other women in the tournament. I mean, Venus may not be playing her best this year, but the serve is still a weapon to be feared, and the way that Serena returned, for me, that was the most impressive thing. I mean, she hit half a dozen clean winners off the return. She was driving a lot of other balls right back at Venus's shoelaces. So the point was really stacked in Serena's favour from the first couple of shots. The rhythm was outstanding. I mean, I know Venus gives her rhythm, doesn't she? Because Venus doesn't mix it up. I mean, it's all hard and flat. She knows what to expect. They practice together a million times, so that helps. But still, you know, there's normally some element of competition in these matches, so For Serena to roll the way she did, then she told Tim Rinaldi afterwards, that's the best I played since I came back. You know, that's a strong indication of how well-placed she is going into the second week.
And I would agree with her as well. I mean, she was just striking the ball so cleanly, wasn't she? And there was still a scare, though. I mean, what was it, second or third game, she rolled her ankle. And actually, when she... I mean, it was quite one of those ones that sort of looks worse in the slow motion, I think, than it does in the real time, that particular one. I don't think it was serious, but she went and took the sock off, had a look at it, and you suddenly realised already her ankle is sort of mummified. Yeah. And then they added more to it. So, you know, she was aware of, I suppose, potential weakness there.
Yeah, I mean, she moved okay. The one weakness that you would have picked up from today would have been the net game, because she was very sluggish coming forward. That's the only time when she was vulnerable, and Venus multiple times was able to bring a false volley out of her or would have passed her cleanly. So that might be, if I was coaching against Serena Williams, I'd be looking at that. I might be trying to play a few short balls, trying to bring her forward, because the baseline game was outstanding tonight, and the net game perhaps a little wobbly, but it wasn't as if she needed it really.
The more they play each other, the more I sort of get this real feel for just how awful it is for them, how uncomfortable the whole process is for them. So there was a great VT on Prime today. They'd got all that footage from when they were kids playing together and all these wonderful things that their dad was saying, you know, just absolutely nailed on predictions for what would happen 30 years later in their lives. But you see how close they are in those pictures, and you saw it at match point there today, and it's great that they can actually go out there and be competitive. Okay, it wasn't a competitive one in terms of the result tonight, but still, you know, they really do give their all, don't they? I mean, okay, maybe there's not the sort of spite that there might be against someone else, but it's not easy.
Well, there was an amusing suggestion from Mats Wilander, who said that perhaps on top of making pregnant mothers protected in seedings, we should introduce a rule that sisters have to be on opposite sides of the draw, because it really isn't beneficial for anybody. I mean, also, it's difficult for the crowd. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to support. They don't know quite how to deal with the situation. And it can be a bit flat. I mean, tonight went a bit flat when it became obvious that Serena was sort of 4-1 up and just accelerating into the distance. And that probably would have been the case against anybody. But there wasn't that kind of... If it had been somebody else, the crowd might have got really behind the opponent, mightn't they? And they might have been really jeeing around, but they didn't quite sort of know where to go. Mind you, every seat was taken in there. It was an absolutely massive crowd, wasn't it? It must have been 22,000, 23,000 people. It was fuller than I've seen it for a lot of finals.
There's nothing like these two, actually, as a show in this town, I don't think.
Yeah, it's funny because it's an occasion, it's a story. Like, it's the greatest story in sports, John Wertheim will tell you. And, you know, I mean, it's hard to argue with that, but it's never a great match, is it?
No, rarely. And actually, you just lose that sense of kind of being that bothered about who wins, unless you are a massive fan of one or the other. I think for the story, for us, Serena Williams is obviously the better story. But, I mean, I imagine today, Simon, that the story for you is Rafael Nadal and the struggles he had.
Well, actually, we did Act 3 of Liargate.
Oh, yeah, so this is rolling back a couple of days, so we'll go pre-Mohamed Leani gate. We've been gate full this tournament. And so, go on, just give us the gist of that one.
Well, really, I mean, we're rolling back 3 days here because, you know, we lost all the British players on Wednesday, so we're having to extend the stories with a local interest for as long as we can. But no, it's quite fun. I mean, the Marcus Baghdatis was brought into the story that was put forward by Fernando Verdasco for why he'd been chatting away in the locker room during his heat break against Andy Murray. And Marcos wasn't really going along with the story, was he? He was actually telling us in the interview room that, Fernando's coach was there. Yeah, I mean, obviously they weren't talking about anything that they shouldn't have been. No, of course not, but yes, he was there. It wasn't just me and my coach, so that just took it forward. But because Marcos then had a pop at the officiating and quite rightly said it's not up to the players to police themselves, you know, they've got to be the officials on hand to make sure none of this happens, and it's the US Tennis Association that have to deliver their policy. I mean, we sat here, didn't we, on Tuesday, I think it was. And we agreed that it was a good move to bring in this heat rule for the men. But the men aren't used to it. They need to be guided because they don't have it. They've never had it before. Yeah. It's the first.
So it's been cobbled together, really, hasn't it?
And thus, you have to make absolutely sure that you're doing your utmost as an organisation to police it, to organise it, to make it clear. I mean, how many players here have got the hump because they've gone off for their heat break, they've come back, they've been told that they've overrun, and they genuinely didn't have a clue. And in the quotes of Marcus Baghdatis, he says, you know, Fernando was screaming, how long have I got? And there was no one there to tell him.
Yeah.
We even spoke to Cameron Norrie, who revealed that he'd come off court in his heat break against Dusan Ljubic. He hadn't gone to the locker room, he'd come to the press room because when we interviewed him before the tournament, he sat there going, bloody hell, I'm so cold! he'd been shivered all the way through his interview. And so the first thing he thought, the light bulb went on in his head, as soon as he said, oh, I'm going to go to the press room. I didn't see him. It would be hilarious to actually see him. He'd come in and sort of sat on this tiny interview table, dripping away with his full kit, with a red face, staring in the...
All right, Cameron. And he'd be like, I'm not allowed to talk to you.
Yeah, so. It's like give us a sense of what you were thinking on that break point in Game 7.
Now, the big story really today is Rafael Nadal, because that was a heck of a match. I mean, 4 hours plus against Karen Khachanov, and Nadal was shown to be exercising his knee or his leg before the match in the sort of gym area with Carlos Moore. There was clearly an issue. Then he had treatment to it, and he had it wrapped. He had it strapped a couple of times. He lost the first set 7-5. I mean, it was not vintage Nadal anything like in terms of his timing. He was really struggling with finishing off rallies at the net in a way that you rarely see, and yet he still somehow managed to survive. What was your read of it all?
Yeah, I mean, he was asked by ESPN after the match about his knee, and he said, I really don't want to talk about it. I'm in the middle of a tournament. If you were, you know, organising the odds, you'd suddenly be pushing him out quite a lot further on the basis that he's not necessarily in the best of shape. Also, what was going on with that camera in the warm-up room or the gym or whatever it was? I mean, I'm all for behind-the-scenes access. I'm all for knowing what's going on. I'm a reporter, but it did seem a little bit sneaky, you know, because I'm not sure Rafael Nadal would have been all that happy if he'd known he'd been being recorded. It looked like somebody was controlling a remote sort of closed-circuit camera.
Well, the Australian Open, I mean, they have that all over the place, don't they? These sort of surveillance-type cameras, and they're picking up everything and putting it out. And it did cause one or two problems once. So I remember with Roger Federer when he was shown to be sort of sharing a joke with one of the other players, and he didn't like that at all.
Yeah, it was Grigor, wasn't it? He was kicking the ball around with Grigor before they played each other, which rightly demonstrated that Grigor really needs to work out, like, how to play his friend Roger. But anyway, in the instance of Rafael Nadal today, I'm sure he'll be pretty annoyed that people are getting access to information about him from the warm-up room.
Yeah. In terms of the match itself, Khachanov showed me something that I'd not seen before. An incredible heart and a real determination to mix it with one of the big boys, because he'd never won a set against any of the big four before today. And he won the first set, and he didn't go away. That was what was really interesting to me. There's probably some big points that he lost, which ultimately cost him the match. But he just kept on coming back for more. He was a Goliath out there, and boy, can he move.
Well, it was a four-set match, but what was it, about 4 hours, 10 minutes? So every one of those sets was an absolute dogfight, and he went for it, didn't he? That was the other thing. He was very brave in the way that he played. He upset Rafa, because Rafa was clearly not moving at his best, so he felt very anxious because he couldn't keep up with the pace and the depth that Khachanov was throwing at him, and the variety, which was impressive too. And then he got tight again at the end, didn't he, Rafa, because he served for the match, played a terrible game, ended up having to do it in the tie break on the fourth set. So it's just the level to which Khachanov was going pedal to the metal that upset Rafa, made him feel unnerved on top of the physical issue that he had. But I think you're, if you're looking at your overall predictions for the tournament, Novak's odds must be coming down and Rafa's must be going up.
I know, but I've picked Nadal to win the title.
Well, I picked Simona Halep to win the title, so
it's going well.
Leave me out of it.
Oh, brilliant. So what else has happened today? Quickly, you've got to go and get your bus, but just very quickly, before that, we had Sloane Stephens beating Victoria Azarenka. She's looking increasingly the real deal.
Well, what I was impressed by was a celebration, because normally you've got no idea whether she's won or she's lost. When if you come into the court, they're shaking hands. Like, she's so impassive and languid. But this time, she did this multiple fist-pumping roar. Then she waved to the crowd and shook. Did she do the handshake after that? So maybe she did a fist pump, then she shook hands, and then she did another bunch of fist pumps.
Yeah, that was right.
I mean, like, that was like as much emotion from Sloane Stephens as she normally lets out in the course of an entire tournament, and like an entire slam. And she let it out in 2 minutes. Now, to me, that's really interesting, because it's like she's beginning to admit that I really care about this. I'm defending this title. I'm not going to let people take it off me easily. You know, Azarenka played decent level without being quite at her most deadly, and particularly at the end of the match, the final game, Sloane was really attacking again. I mean, she doesn't always bother with attacking, does she? Sometimes she just soaks up pressure, lets you make a mistake. But she went for it. And so those two could meet, the Serena and Sloane, couldn't they? Is it a quarterfinal potentially?
Yeah, I think so. I need to check the draw. I'll come back on in a minute and check the draw, and I'll have that for you. Just last one before you go, Simon. The Mohamed Layani situation today, he was back in the chair, and the USTA released a statement this morning saying that he is, he didn't follow protocol, but, you know, the words exemplary behaviour in the past were used, and basically they're letting him off, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fine. I think he overstepped the mark. I think he knows it. I think everyone knows it. But, he's been doing this for a long time. He's very popular. He's been a very good umpire. I don't think it changed the
popularity relevant?
Umpires, there's a human element to what they do. It's not just
I mean, I read a piece today saying umpires are not robots, you know. They have feelings too. People have feelings about them. They are involved in the match in some way, one way or another. You cannot take them out of the match. I don't think he was solely the person that won the match. You know, Kyrgios won the match. Okay, he might have needed a bit of a slap around the face. Perhaps it wasn't right that Lyon should have provided it. But, you know, it's the interest of the tournament at the end of the day that Kyrgios is playing Federer tomorrow night.
Is it in the interest of the tournament and the sport that we are questioning the fairness of an umpire, given that, I mean, the bloke that he didn't give the talking to ended up losing from a winning position?
Well, as you know, David, I tend to think that a story is always good news for no matter what it is. Something to talk about, I'm happy.
All right, Simon, go and get the bus. I'll come back on in a minute and find out more about what's going on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Well, now I'm in the press room and Juan Martín del Potro is currently playing and I've got nobody to talk to in person. However, I'm still joined by Catherine Whittaker. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, David.
Hello. We're recording remotely now because Catherine's just put in a 14-hour day and it was a bit much to ask her to expect her to stay all the way to the end of the Del Potro match when she's got to be back in work in the studio at about 7:30 in the morning. So here we are, but we're still together and we're still having a chat about tennis. But really, I was talking to Simon Briggs there about the slightly disappointing feel to the match, at least the way the result went for Venus and Serena Williams. I just wanted to know, did that surprise you? Did you think we were going to get a barnstorming match?
No, I didn't. It surprised me that Venus didn't get a couple of more games. It surprised me that Serena was that good. And it really made me realise how by her very high standards, how relatively poor she was at Wimbledon, really. In all honesty, she had a favourable draw. She gutsed her way through an awful lot and she got exposed by Angelique Kerber in the final, I think. But this is a completely different kettle of fish. I mean, Venus said this is, you might already have gone over this with Simon, Venus said this is the best she thinks Serena's ever played against her.
Wow. No, they, we didn't. We were before the press conference.
She
That's
said that in press and they have played 30 times.
Wow.
Going back to 1997, they've played 30 times and she said it's the best ever. So, yeah, that tells you a lot.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. And actually, Serena said herself, didn't she, that this is the best I've played since I've come back. And I mean, I think that was fairly obvious.
By a country mile, yeah.
But that's some quote from Venus, isn't it? Cruel, dear. And I can see where she's coming from. There haven't been many sort of beatdowns in that
rivalry at all, have they? You know, there've been the occasional relatively comfortable win, but I mean that was a total blowout, really.
Yeah, it was the joint least close match that they've ever played. There was one of the same scoreline in Charleston in 2013, I believe. That stat courtesy of Stu Fraser, Simon's great rival. it was a beatdown. Absolutely, it was a beatdown. They're more about the occasion and the whole process of trying desperately to fathom the emotion that's going on rather than about forehands and backhands and a great, thrilling match. It's drama, isn't it? It's about when you're seeing them on the court and sort of mentally going back through all the archive footage that you've seen, and it's about reminding yourself that they and the family probably are one of the greatest sporting stories ever told. If somebody, you know, wrote it all in a movie script, a producer somewhere would probably go, "No, mate, that's too preposterous. No, it's too ridiculous. That couldn't happen." So that's what their matches are about for me, rather than any kind of incredible tennis matchup. I mean, yeah, there's no clash of styles for one thing, and that generally speaking makes for the better matches.
I've spoken to Simon about the Nadal-Khachanov match generally, but what did your team and you, I mean, it's so different, isn't it? You get a different vantage point. I'm up in the commentary box up high commentating on Five Live. I was with Naomi Brody, and Simon's down in the press room, probably in and out. Sometimes they've got an amazing set of seats, haven't they, courtside, that you sometimes see them sitting just behind the players. And then you're in the studio, you're often with Daniela Hantikova and Greg Rozetsky and one or two others. What was the feel and the kind of scoop from your side? What did you think was going on?
Goodness me. Well, to pick out one overall feel from 4 hours and 22 minutes is quite difficult. I mean, it feels facile to say it's a breakthrough moment for Karen Khachanov. It's more than that. It feels like the making of him. It feels like a match that I can see him looking back on in 10 years and saying, "I'm glad I lost that match because it made me who I am today." It felt like that kind of match. It reminded me of Leighton Hewitt against Andy Roddick in the quarterfinals here in 2002. And I remember Andy Roddick going absolutely bananas about an overall by George Diaz. I even remember who was in the chair. That was how much a tennis nerd I was.
Where's George 16. Diaz these days?
I don't think we saw a lot of him after that match because it was pre-Hawkeye. And I remember the replay showing us vividly that it was one of the worst overalls of all time. And I think it was in visor-wearing days for Andy Roddick. And I just remember a bevisored Andy Roddick going absolutely bananas. But anyway, he came back the next year and he won it. I'm not necessarily saying Karen Khachanov's going to do that, but he certainly showed me something today I'm not sure was there. I saw him as part of that talented crop. I saw him as maybe or quite probably a top 20 player, but I now am revising those expectations upwards.
It's quite exciting, actually, Del Potro-Verdasco. I'm just sort of hoping that it... I mean, as much as I love an epic, I mean, we've had enough epics today. And Serena and Venus was quite quick, but it is about 11:30 at night as I speak to you, and I'm sitting in a little radio room. Anyway, I agree with you, incidentally, about Khachanov. That made me look at him in a different way. I've never been that impressed. I've always been hugely impressed with his movement, but just the way he hits the ball, I've often thought, technically, it just looks like you could get at him. And today, his technique really stood up, you know?
Oh, crikey. I mean, the guy, he's got one of the biggest serves on tour, and the guy was at 80% first serves in for the first set and a half, and I think he was over 70% for the match, I think, or 69% maybe. I think technique on the serve has got to be pretty sound to be serving that well, that consistently. I agree with you, and I remember Mats Wilander picking out a few holes in his game technically a couple of years ago, and pointing to the fact that it was kind of a game too specifically built and tailored for Clay.
Yes.
But he's definitely made some adjustments. He's brought on Goran Ivanišević's old coach, hasn't he? His name escapes me for the moment, David. Perhaps as resident Croatia correspondent, you can help me.
Is it? Oh, was it?
It's a very Croatian-sounding name, if that helps.
Oh, I know him. No, you're right. You know, I was going to say it's Riccardo Piatti, but it isn't.
It's not.
I think his name is Vedran or something like that. And he is. I've never seen him coach anybody else except Goran Ivanišević about 20 years ago and Karen Hatchinov. You're right.
Yeah, it's him. It's him. And he definitely seems to have... look, you know we're on slightly dodgy ground when we start talking about the technical stuff, but if I can see a difference, then there has to have been a difference made, some tweaking. And, you know, look at him. The guy, he's looked about 30 since he was 17. He's obviously physically up to it, without question.
Did it look to you and to people you were with that Nadal is in real trouble here physically in terms of the rest of the tournament?
No, the people I was with, and, you know, without being inside the mind of Rafael Nadal, it's impossible for them to know as much as it is for me. Greg Rozetsky found it significant that Nadal didn't request painkillers on the court. Thought if the knee was a real issue, he would have been having painkillers. But then I suppose Nadal maybe might not be wanting, you know, especially in the position he was in, wanting Khachanov to be seeing him taking painkillers. Who knows? Maybe it was, you know, a big game of bluff. But, he quite often plays with that taping around his knees, and it seems to be precautionary as much as anything. So, I don't know, time will tell. 4 hours and 22 minutes of absolutely grueling tennis could take its toll, but I don't think there's any alarmism going around. I'd say there's more alarmism about where he's standing to return serve, and I know the courts are playing slowly this year. Everyone's saying it. Greg actually suggested that they'd done that to try and help John Isner win, which seems like a long shot.
Sounds
to me
ever so slightly far-fetched. I don't mean to,
yeah,
you know. I think so too.
But anyway, it's an interesting hypothesis. But yeah, I know everyone's in agreement that these courts are playing slowly.
But I've never seen anybody stand back that far ever.
No, I mean, and he's leaving him. He's gambling on the fact that nobody's going to be able to bully him from back there and overpower him. And Khachanov proved that it's possible, and I think others that he may face, and let's face it, he does have a good fourth round draw in Nicolas Basilashvili, but beyond that, others will have watched this match, and I think will see a chink, maybe, and a chink may not be enough, but I don't know, I think it will give others hope.
Nicolas Basilashvili is the next one he's up against.
Yes.
I mean, you know, he's a good player, not the worst draw in the world. And then it's either team...
I think they played in Paris last year and Basilashvili was, you know, barely getting points, let alone games.
I remember that one.
And I mean, that's clay, but still.
Then it's team or Anderson. Just quickly, on Anderson, he beat Shapovalov 6-4 in the fifth. Did you get the same feeling about breakthrough performance from Shapovalov as you did for Khachanov today?
No, because he's already had his moments, hasn't he? He's before today, everyone knew that Denis Shapovalov was an absolute bare minimum, a top 10 player in the making, you know, in waiting. Most people wouldn't have nailed their colours to the mast about Karen Khachanov in that regard before today, but I think most are. So I don't think there's any turnaround in, you know, this is a guy that beat Joe Wilfried Tsonga as a qualifier last year. So, and Tsonga was, you know, Tsonga was playing well this time last year. So it's not the same for me, even though Shapovalov is significantly younger than Khachanov still, well, and always will be, but you know what I mean.
So that's today. What about tomorrow, Saturday, middle Saturday? I tell you what's really interesting, Catherine, is the fact that Nick Kyrgios against Roger Federer isn't the night match. I mean, we were all so sure, weren't we? I mean, it's got sort of night session under the lights written all over it. But it seems, and we got a message from our good friend and pod guest favourite, Mary Carrillo, telling us that the reason for it is because of a massive, great, big college football game that's on at night time, and therefore you can't clash with that.
Ah, well, I did notice that Venus versus Serena was bumped onto ESPN2 for college football. Now, I know that things are different over here, and college sport is a really big deal, but can you imagine, like, Andy Murray against Roger Federer being bumped off for a university hockey match? No, yes. Sorry, this will be moving to BBC Two because Loughborough against Brunel is about to start.
Red button. No. Red button for that one.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's what I mean. It is a weekend, isn't it? I kind of forgot that. So maybe day session for US audiences is actually a bigger deal. And
that's
obviously
right. Yeah.
It's better for European audiences by far that it be during the day.
Yeah,
because
it's
going to start, you know, approximately 7 p.m. UK time, which is brill. I just thought, I just can't quite picture that match not occurring under floodlights.
No, I think it could well end up being a much lesser match for it. I may be wrong, but it just feels like it should be a night match and have that stage. But
weirdly, I think it favours Federer, even though we always say that Federer plays better at night than during the day.
Oh,
which
I agree
he does.
With you. Yeah,
it's that is the case, but times 10 for Nick Kyrgios.
Yes, if you can keep Kyrgios down and not excited, you've got a better chance of beating him. And that said, you know, he's always produced against Federer, hasn't he? What do you think is going to happen?
I think he's going to compete his ass off, David.
I think it's going to go four sets. There you go.
Yeah, I think four with two tie breaks in there, and Federer's going to win, and it's going to be not quite epic, but really good.
And really exciting, and everybody will love Nick Kyrgios. He'll go off, everybody will applaud him, but Roger Federer will win.
Yeah.
That's the gist of
what's
going to happen.
And all be forgotten.
Before that, Madison Keys plays Alexandra Krunic. Maria Sharapova against Yelena Ostapenko. I mean, that is going to be high-octane tennis.
Yeah, really similar games because for both of them, certainly at the moment for Sharapova, the serve is the weakness. You know, I watched Sharapova against Castella last night and her serve was... It was horrible. It was really...
Yeah, she's all
really
over the shop, isn't she?
All over the... I mean, Castella should feel horrible about... I mean, she didn't even get a set last night. And she was... You just can't be missing returns when someone's, you know, serving that badly and clearly having the yips so badly on their serve. She just wasn't getting returns in play. And it's unforgivable in that scenario. So, provided Yelena Ostapenko can exercise a tiny bit of self-control in... force herself to make enough balls, make enough returns, and not absolutely redline it all the time. And I realise that's a big if with Yelena Ostapenko. I think she ought to win because Sharapova is really far off. But having said that, she's never lost a night match.
Yeah, and she always goes after second serves, and Yelena Ostapenko doesn't have a very good second serve. They had a good match not that long ago, I remember. I can't remember where it was, but anyway. And I think Ostapenko won, I think. I can't remember. Anyway, Djokovic against Gasquet is after that. Louis Armstrong Court is Bertens against Vondrousova. Sibulkova against Kerber. That could be close.
Oh, yeah, should be on Ash. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Zverev against Kohlschreiber. Zverev's being very quiet, isn't he? And I think that's to his benefit so far.
Yeah. Lendl continues to terrify me on the practice court.
Yeah. Kvitova against Sabalenka, evening session.
Oh.
That's annoying. Why is that on the same time as Sharapova Ostapenko? I want to watch both matches.
Yeah, I know.
We can watch replays now on Amazon Prime. It all works now, so... Well, we're all right.
Stealing my script, David. I've been saying that all day on air.
I'm good at this, aren't I? I should be your partner in crime, you know, filling the gaps. Anyway, Marin Cilic against Alex Dimonor is after that. There's loads of stuff going on tomorrow. So Right, go and put your feet at Catherine. You've got an alarm call in about 6 hours. More tennis tomorrow. Can't wait. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Amazon Prime Video UK, the home of the US Open in the UK. And Catherine's going to be presenting it all day tomorrow. Brilliant. We are also executive produced by Melanie Bowes, tennisballs.com, Triple S. Our mascot is Charlie the ferret, of course, and we are sponsored by the Manga Club. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.